like this morning to turn to the 115th Psalm, Psalm 115. I'd like to read verses 3 and verse 4 of Psalm 115. But our God is in the heavens. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands. The 115th Psalm, there is no evidence as to the author, as to the place or the time of this psalm. However, we do get some idea of the circumstances under which the psalm was written. We gather that from the question that was asked in verse 2, "Wherefore should the heathen say, where is now their God?" This question is also seen in Psalm 42, also in Psalm 79, the book of Joel, chapter 2, and the book of Micah, chapter 7. And that is significant because each time the question is asked, it is asked by the enemies of God, when God's people were experiencing some troubles, some difficulties, some suffering, some disruption in their life, some unrest, and some distress. So from that we can gather that this psalm was written in such a time. Also from the question of verse 2, and every time the question is asked, it is asked with a tone of ridicule, a tone of mockery and sarcasm, which of course is indicative of opposition. So this was also a time of opposition or a time of persecution. So we do have some idea of the circumstances under which the psalm was written. Now, the theme of the psalm is the greatness, the supremacy, the majesty, the awesomeness, and the goodness of the Lord. The design of the psalm is to expose the vanity of idols and to encourage trust and confidence in the Lord and to excite the Lord's people to give glory and praise to the Lord. The tone of the psalm is really set forth in verse 1 in the form of a prayer. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory for thy mercy and for thy truth's sake. Now, as you read through the psalm, there is a contrast between the heathen that are mentioned in verse 2 and the people of God. But there is even a more marked and pronounced contrast drawn between, notice in verse 3, our God, and verse 4, their idols. There is a sharp contrast drawn between our God and their idols. In those two phrases, our God, their idols, speak of two entirely different nucleuses for living life. I want to speak this morning on the subject of our God, their idols. In the psalm, we see that the heathen center their lives around their idols. That's what they live for. That is how their life is defined, by their idols. On the other hand, we have the people of God, and their lives are to center around their God. And they are to live lives that would correspond to their God. So we want to look this morning, first of all, at the heathen and their idols. And then we want to look at the people of God and their God. And again, this should be, these are nucleuses for living our lives. But first of all, let's consider the heathen and their idols. The heathen in the Old Testament have reference to the enemy nations of Israel. They represent the unsaved. Throughout the Word of God, they represent the unsaved. In the Bible, they are pictured as a people that are ignorant of God. They are a people who have a misconception of God. And they are despisers of God. They have contempt for God manifested by their question in verse 2. They are marked by irreverence and defiance of God. And they live their lives as rebels in opposition to God. This is the heathen. The heathen are the lost. The heathen are those who live ungodly lives. Now we are told that these heathen, in verse 4, they have their idols. The heathen are mentioned in verse 2, and then in verse 4, their idols. That is, the idols of the heathen. And these idols are made by them. You notice in verse 4 that they are the work of men's hands. Also, these idols are very appealing to the eyes of man. We read again in verse 4, their idols are silver and gold. Very appealing. No doubt these idols are an object of pride. They are the work of their hands. And as the heathen looked upon their idols, there was a sense of pleasure. There was a sense of gratification. There was a sense of achievement. Look at what we have done. We have made this beautiful idol. By reading verses 5 through 7, he gives a description of these idols. It says, they have mouths, but they speak not. Eyes they have, but they see not. They have ears, but they hear not. Noses have they, but they smell not. They have hands, but they handle not. Feet have they, but they walk not. Neither speak they through their throat. Talking about their idols. What he's saying is, though they were made to have mouths, these idols are silent. And though they were made to have eyes, these idols were blind. And though they were made to have ears, these idols were deaf. And though they were made to have noses, they are unreceptive. They're unreceptive. They do not receive anything from man. And though they are made to have hands, the idol cannot reach out and grasp hold of you. The idol cannot lay hold of anything. And though they are made to have feet, they are motionless. And they are stationary. And they are dormant. In other words, their idols are powerless. Their idols are dead. So dead and so useless that it is said at the end of verse 7, neither speak they through their throat. What that means is, get real close to that idol, and there's not even a grunt. There's not even a mutter in their throat. They are absolutely lifeless. They are absolutely worthless. They are frauds. They are vanity. They're idols. They're idols. Now, the fact that they had idols shows that they had an exalted view of themselves and a demeaning view of God. The background of all idolatry, whatever form it takes, doesn't matter. The background of all idolatry is us. The background of all idolatry is self. And that is why we read in verse 1 twice, not unto us, O Lord, not unto us. This is the background of all idolatry. Self is the underlying characteristic of all idolatry. In fact, self is the biggest idol of all. And it leads to the building of other idols. Now, we read here in verse 4, their idols. Now, in the Old Testament, idols, of course, primarily were graven images. And in our day, most people think of idolatry as something limited to so-called primitive cultures. Most think of it as bowing down to statues. And though such is certainly idolatry, idolatry is not limited to such. You see, idolatry is not merely an Old Testament problem. And idolatry is not merely a problem of primitive cultures. I believe that we live in a time where there's more idols and more idolatry than there's ever been in the history of man today. And I believe our culture and our society is more idolatrous than some so-called primitive cultures. But that's another message. But idolatry and idols are everywhere. They can be found amongst all people. They can be found in all cultures. But wherever there is idolatry, and again, whatever form it takes, it doesn't matter. Wherever there is idolatry, there is a turning away from God. And there is a reluctance and a disinclination toward God. They had their idols. And mankind today, though it may not be a graven image, has their idols. An idol is simply a substitute for God, a replacement for God. And I dare say that every single one of us has some substitutes and replacements for God. They're idols. Whatever they might be, these are idols. In a time when you need comfort and you turn to anything but God, is that not a substitute? Is that not a replacement? That makes it an idol. That makes it an idol. An idol is something that is held, has a higher priority than God. That's an idol. An idol is something that is considered and treated more important than God. Now, Christendom says nothing is more important to us than God. But that's not how they act. Something that is more acknowledged than God is an idol. Something that is more thought of than God is an idol. Something that is held in higher esteem than God is an idol. Something that is more desired than God is an idol. Something that is more trusted, more delighted in, more honored, and more glorified than God. Those are idols. They are substitutes and replacements for God. An idol is something more believed in than God. Even God's people have some things that they believe in more than they do God. Some believe in the economy more than they do God. Some believe in their jobs more than they do God. Some believe in their families more than they do God. These are idols. Something more respected than God is an idol. Something shown more loyalty to than God is an idol. Something given more attention to than God is an idol. Now, people do not like when you identify idols this way. They would rather keep it. An idol is a graven image, and I don't have any graven images in my life. I don't have any statues that I bow down to, so I'm innocent. There isn't a one of us here that's innocent of idolatry. No one. We live, perhaps, in the most idolatrous culture of all time. An idol is something that we allow to have more authority and dominance in our lives than God. We give it that place. That's an idol. You see, an idol is a rival to usurp the Lord. Idolatry is an act of theft. Because idolatry steals honor that is due to God. That is an act of theft. It is the highest act of theft that there is. Idolatry. It is God that gives security, meaning, and purpose to life. And anything else that is dependent upon to bring security, meaning, and purpose to life, is that not a substitute? Is that not a replacement for God? The truth is, our hearts are idol-making factories. The heathen make their idols. And the hearts of man make their idols. And anything and everything can become an idol. Now in our text, the idols captured the attention, the interest, the time, and the commitment of the heathen. Their thoughts and their desires were consumed with these idols. Their idols dominated their lives. There are very few people who can honestly say, God dominates my life. There are very few who can honestly say that. Most have many other things that dominate their life. Those are idols. Those are idols. The heathen were engrossed with their idols. They were absorbed with these idols. They gave themselves to these idols. These idols became their lifestyle. They were controlled and fastened by their idols. So much so that we read in verse 8, they that make them are like unto them. That is, they became their idols. Their life became their idols. Their life sunk to the level of their idols. Psalm 9 and verse 15. We read, the heathen are sunk down in the pit that they made. In the net which they hid is their own foot taken. The heathen descend to the level of their idols. And everybody descends to the level of their idols. Now, these heathen, they became like their idols. They live lives of futility. They live lives of vanity. How many times you hear people say, I just feel like I'm spinning my wheels, I'm not getting anywhere. Get the idols out of your life. You see, that's what idols lead to. Futility. Vanity. Their lives became pointless. They became like their idols. Their lives became hollow. Their lives became barren. Their lives became empty. Their lives became powerless and hopeless. This is what their lives became. This is the lifestyle that they lived. Because their life is centered around their idols. They lived lives of weariness. They lived lives of frustration. They lived lives of discouragement. They lived lives of confusion and restlessness. And their lives continued to deteriorate and decline. And what did they do? They continued to be mesmerized and spellbound by their idols. Just like man today. Just like Christendom today. People's lives are not working. They are serving their idols. Their lives are not working. Their lives are in decline. Their lives are deteriorating. And what do? They continue to be mesmerized. They continue to be spellbound by their idols. And their life continues to deteriorate. We read in Jeremiah 10 in verse 2, learn not the way of the heathen. Learn not the way of the heathen. The heathen teach in our schools. No offense to school teachers here. The heathen run the television shows. The heathen run the radio programs. The heathen print the newspapers. The heathen print the magazines and the books. I'm telling you, we are learning the way of the heathen. We don't think anything of it. And we bow down to the same idols. The heathen have their idols. And we are learning the way of the heathen. Now let's consider the saved and their God. Notice, first of all, though, in Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7. Verse 5 and verse 6. Talking about when they entered the land of Canaan, how they were to deal with the heathen and the idols of the heathen. But thus shall you deal with them. Ye shall destroy their altars. What do we do today? We come and learn at their altars. And break down their images. And cut down their groves. And burn their graven images with fire. Why? For thou art a holy people. That is, you're not like them. Thou art a holy people, a separated people unto the Lord thy God. The Lord thy God hath chosen thee to be a special people unto himself, above all people that are upon the face of the earth. Learn not the way of the heathen, because you and I that are saved are a special people. We are a people unto God. And our lives are to manifest that. Learn not the way of the heathen. Tear down the idols. Burn them. Destroy them. And you notice as you read through the Old Testament, and every time there was a revival, prior to the revival, there was a turn, there was a burning, there was a destroying of the idols of the land. People today are not willing to get rid of their idols, but they want revival. People today want revival that brings no change to their life, that does not upset their lifestyle. It doesn't work that way. So let's consider the saved now and their God. Notice again verse 3. But our God, that is in contrast to their idols. The difference between our God and their idols is to be seen in our life. Our God, that's our nucleus. That is what we are to center our life around. Our God. The heathens, they center their life around their idols. We are to center our lives around our God. Now notice what it says. Our God is in the heavens. Unlike their idols, which are strictly earthly, our God is in the heavens. That means He's eternal. That means He's everlasting. That means He's absolute. Their idols, the idols of the heathen, are just for time. But He is firm. He is solid. Our God is in the heavens. That means He's higher and He's greater than anything on the earth. Our God, their idols. Not only is our God in the heavens, but it says He hath done whatsoever He hath pleased. That means our God reigns supreme. That means that our God, He's king. Our God, He's almighty. What this means is that there is nothing beyond His dominion. There is nothing beyond His control. There is no place. There is no situation. There is no circumstance. There is no power. There is no person beyond the jurisdiction of our God. And this is where we're to center our life. Our God. Our God. But I'm afraid many have centered their lives around their idols. In fact, it's no longer their idols, it's our idols. But our God. Our God, unlike their idols, is not the product of man. The God that most people have invented in their minds is just a form of idolatry. It is something they have created. A God that they can control. A God that they are stronger than. That's idolatry. Our God, unlike their idols, is not a product of man. Their idols, they were not only inferior to God, but they were inferior to man. And that is the God that most people create in their minds. A God that is inferior to man. That is idolatry. It is no different than going out in your backyard and building a statue and bowing down to it. No different at all. Our God, unlike their idols, speaks. Our God, unlike their idols, sees. Our God, unlike their idols, He hears. Our God, unlike their idols, He can accept from our hands. He can accept our offerings and our worship. Our God, unlike their idols, can reach out and touch us. Can reach out and lay hold of us. Our God, unlike their idols, He has hands He can distribute to our needs. Our God, unlike their idols, read Isaiah chapter 44 sometime. Their idols must be lifted and carried by them to their places. In other words, their idols needed the aid and assistance of man. Sounds familiar to the God that many have created in their minds. Idolatry. Their idols needed man's assistance. And their idols could not come to their assistance. You see, their idols, unlike our God, their idols were helpless. Their idols were motionless and dormant. But our God, He's alive. Our God is able. Our God can. But their idols can't. Our God, unlike their idols, is our help and our protection. Notice in verse 9 through verse 11, three times at the end of each of these verses, He says, He is their help and their shield or protection. He is their help and their shield. He is their help and their shield. That is our God. Our God, that which we are to center our lives around. Our God, which is eternal. Our God, which is everlasting. Our God, which is absolute. Our God, who's higher and greater than all that is in the earth. Our God, who reigns supreme in the heaven. Our God, who sees. Our God, who speaks. Our God, who hears. Our God, who touches. Our God, who is able to distribute. Our God, who is present. He is our help and our protection. Center your life around our God. Our God, unlike the idols, He's loving. He's compassionate. He's caring. He's merciful. He's gracious. Verse 12 says, "The Lord hath been mindful of us. He will bless us. He will bless the house of Israel. He will bless the house of Aaron. He will bless them that fear the Lord, both small and great. The Lord shall increase you more and more, and your children. Ye are blessed of the Lord, which made heaven and earth." Our God is caring. Our God is merciful. Our God is gracious. The heathen, they are anchored to their idols. Their idols, again, had absorbed their attention. Their idols had absorbed their interest, their time, their thoughts, their desires. This is where they placed their confidence, in their idols. This is where they placed their trust, in their idols. They had given themselves over to the idols, and their entire life was centered around their idols. But we read here in verse 3, "But our God." That is our central point, or should be. That is our nucleus for life. Our God. The world is filled with idols. These are not to capture our attention. But our God is to capture our attention. Our God is to capture our interest, our thoughts, our desires, our confidence, our trust. Three times in verses 9 through 11, we are called upon to trust the Lord, to trust our God. He says, "O Israel." O is an exclamation, an exclamation point. O Israel, O house of Aaron, trust. Trust the Lord. This is where our confidence is to be, not in the idols of the heathen. This is where our dependence is to be. This is where our reliance is to be. Not in the idols of the heathen, but trust in God. That is, lean upon Him, rest in Him, cleave to Him, look to Him, flee to Him. Our God. This should describe our lives. The psalm opens in verse 1 with a desire for God's glory. And it ends in verse 18 with a determination to praise the Lord. So the psalm begins and ends with tribute to God, with gratitude to God, with homage to God, with honor and admiration to God. This should be our life. This should be the nucleus of our life. And we've already seen that the underlying characteristic of idolatry is us. The underlying characteristic of a life centered around God is just the opposite. Verse 1, not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but unto thy name give glory. Self is not to be our nucleus. Self is not to be the center of our lives. That is, the nucleus is not our wants. How do you know if the nucleus is your wants? You get what you want, you're happy. If you don't get what you want, you pout, you throw a tantrum, you're miserable for days. That's your nucleus, my friend, self. You're an idolater. You worship at the altar of self. Again, people don't want to hear that, but it's truth. It's not how we are treated. That's not the nucleus. This person didn't treat me right, therefore I don't like them. This person treated me right, therefore I like them. That's not the nucleus. The nucleus is not how you're treated. The nucleus is our God. Our God. The nucleus is not our desires. The nucleus is not our pleasures. The nucleus is not our comforts. The nucleus is not our opinions. It's not our honor. And it's not even our feelings. That's not the nucleus. The nucleus of our life is to be our God. Our God. Our God is to be our purpose for living. Our God is to be our cause. Our God is to be the keynote of our lives. Our God is to be our supreme motive. Our God is to be our reason, our basis for living and conducting our lives. Our God. That is to be our nucleus. That is to be our incentive. Our God. But let's face it. The incentive of many is their idols. That's their incentive. Whether it be the idol of self or whatever. But God is our incentive. Our God, that's to be our passion. That's to be our goal. That is to be our aim. So we read here in verse 3, but our God. We as God's people need to be gripped by the majesty, by the power, by the almightiness of God. And center our lives around God. That's where we find courage. You don't find courage in their idols. This is where we find resolve, our God. This is where we find steadfastness. This is where we find assurance. This is where we find conviction, our God. You don't find these things at their idols. Our God. That's our nucleus. That should be the nucleus of our life. So I ask you today, where is your life anchored? You have anchored it somewhere. Where is your life anchored? our God or their idols? Where is your life anchored? And may I say, it should always be their idols, our God. That's the way it ought to always be. It should never be our idols, but always their idols. Your life is ruled. Your life is managed by whatever you give your life to. And everyone here has patterned their life to some throne. We are bound to some throne. And we pattern our life after that throne. We become what we worship. So we need to ask ourselves, what is it that rules my heart? What is it that rules my thoughts? What is it that I am most mindful of? There are some, you can't even think of God when you're in his house. Your mind goes off to your idols. What is it that we're most mindful of? What is it that compels me? I've got to do this. Our God or their idols? What is it that compels us? What is it that controls us? Our God, their idols? What is it that drives us? Our God or their idols? What is it that motivates me? You know, many pastors are always trying to figure out ways to motivate people. Folks, you can't motivate people that have idols. You're wasting your time. You might as well beat your head against that wall. If God doesn't motivate them, there's nothing you can do. The problem is idolatry. To what does my heart cling? What is it that I refuse to let go of? Our God or their idols? What is it that we're most zealous for? Our God or their idols? What is it that we're most dependent upon? What is it that defines our life? Our God or their idols? As the world looks at us, what defines our life? As other children of God looks at us, what is it that defines our life? Because whatever it is, that's what we live for, whether you want to admit it or not. So there is our God, and there is their idols. Which is it today? Our God, their idols. What is the nucleus of our life today? Our God, their idols. That is a sharp contrast between our God, their idols. But there should also be a sharp contrast in the lifestyle of those. There will be a sharp contrast of those who live for our God and those who live for their idols. Why is it today that you would have to spend a lot of time with most people to finally discover that they are a professor of Jesus Christ? Because their lives manifest no difference. You know why that is? Because they live for their idols. The idols of the heathen,
rather than our God. Many have sent their children off to learn at the feet of the heathen. And then they wonder, oh, I can't believe they turned out this way. There is a reason that Jeremiah said, learn not the way of the heathen. Do not pattern your life. And as soon as someone says, well, everybody else does it, everybody else has it, learn not the way of the heathen. Do not learn their ways. But our God, that's our nucleus. That's where we're to center everything around, our God. This is what our church is to be centered around. This is what our individual lives are to be centered around. This is what our homes and our families are to be centered around, our God, and not their idols. God help us today. Brother Larry, if you'd come and lead us, verse of song.